So we will have a study on the fin system, the external morphology, the fin system and scales of Mugil cephalus. So first of all, we start with the taxonomy of Mugil cephalus, which is given in slide 1. It belongs to kingdom Animalia, phylum Chordata, class Actinopterygii, order Mugiliformis, family Mugilidae, genus Mugil, and the species which we are going to study is Mugil cephalus. So coming to the genus Mugil, they are commonly called as mullets. They are edible marine organisms their spawning takes place in the sea. So some of the species may be seen in brackish waters and estuaries in the younger stages, but once they become adults, they will come and spawn in the sea. So you can consider them to be migrants. They are short distance migrants which move from freshwater bodies and brackish waters and enter the seas. This kind of movement from the river to the sea for spawning is called as catadromous movement, or it is catadromous migration. So, since they spawn in the sea, they have to migrate from the brackish waters and estuaries to the sea. So, such type of migration is said to be catadromous, as shown in slide 2. They have got an elongated oblong body which is covered by two types of scales. They are the cycloid scales and the ctenoid scales. And the mouth, just like a bony fish, the mouth will be terminal at the end of the head and it is somewhat transverse in outline. There will be two dorsal fins with four slender spines on the first dorsal fin. So this is characteristic feature of all species coming under the Mugil genus. And there are three spines on the anal fin, that is also characteristic of all species coming under the Mugil genus. And they have got a homocercal caudal fin. So these are the general characteristics of the genus Mugil. Now slide 3. We go to the type Mugil cephalus. Mugil cephalus is the most popular coming under the genus Mugil, and it is enjoying a circumglobal distribution. That is, it is seen in the coastal waters of the tropical seas, subtropical seas and temperate seas. So it is enjoying worldwide distribution, and the adults, they are found in coastal waters. Their reproduction takes place in the sea. And these larvae, they can migrate back inshore. They may migrate to the fresh waters or estuaries or brackish waters. It is not necessary that they should come to the freshwater phase. So that is why it is said that there is no strict freshwater phase in the life cycle, but strictly their reproduction takes place in the sea. Afterwards, the young ones can migrate to the estuaries or the freshwaters or brackish waters, but to spawn, they will come to the sea. So that is the characteristic of Mugil cephalus. So there is no strict freshwater phase in the life cycle. And they are herbivorous organisms, and the main food constitutes algae and also plankton. Another feature is that they are urehaline, because in their life cycle they switch over from estuarine habitats to the marine habitats or to the freshwater habitats. So they are able to tolerate wide ranges of salinity, because you know that the salinity of seawater is very high, whereas the salinity is very low in freshwater. The salinity fluctuates in estuarine habitats, but they will be able to live there. So they are highly adaptable. That is, whatever be the salinity changes, they will be able to tolerate it and they will survive. So such kind of organisms who can tolerate wide ranges of salinity are said to be urehaline. That shows their adaptability. But there are some fishes which are strictly freshwater, or there are some fishes which are strictly marine. So when they are taken to freshwater, they won't be able to survive, and vice versa also. Such organisms who can tolerate only a narrow range of salinity changes are said to be ctenohaline. But mullets are urehaline. And because of this adaptable nature, they are preferred for aquaculture practices. And not only because of their adaptability, they grow fast and they can also assume a large size, and their meat is also tasty, and this makes them a preferable fish for aquaculture. And the body can reach a size of approximately 50 centimeter, and the maximum length they can reach is 100 centimeter. Even such length has been recorded in Mugil cephalus. So approximately, generally speaking, they can reach a length of 50 centimeter when in the adult stage. Then slide 4. The body is scale covered. It is a moderately elongated body, oblong or leaf like body, and the color is like on back it is somewhat olive green, whereas on the sides it is silvery green, and it is characterized by the presence of 6 to 8 brown bands which transversely running across the body. So that is characteristic of mullet, and the body is scale covered, and there are 3 divisions, that is body is divisible into head, trunk and tail. The head is somewhat depressed. The anterior region of the head, which is called as the snout, it is somewhat blunt and short. The mouth is terminal in position, just like any bony fish, and the mouth is guarded by lips. The upper lip is very thin, and closely examining, the upper lip is having teeth, small teeth in rows. The jaws do not bear teeth, but on the lips you can see teeth. So the upper lip has got outer and inner rows of teeth. The outer rows of teeth are unicuspid, that means they have got only one cusp, whereas the inner rows are having small bicuspid teeth with 2 cusps or 2 cusp means the exposed portion of the teeth will be having an elevation, that is called as cusp, and if it is having only one cusp it is called as the unicuspid, and if it is having 2 cusps it is called as bicuspid. And the lower lip, is also having outer and inner rows of unicuspid and bicuspid teeth respectively. So the lips are provided with small teeth like structures. Then coming to the eyelid, they do not have foldable eyelids, but they have an eyelid like structure which is covering the entire pupil. The entire pupil of this fish is covered by an eyelid like structure. It is called as the adipose eyelid. It is transparent. So it covers almost all of the eye. In the case of mullet, it covers almost all the length of the pupil. Then slide 5. The gills are covered by a bony gill cover or operculum. So the gill slits are not visible outside. In the case of bony fishes, the gill slits are not visible, unlike a cartilaginous fish where the gill slits are exposed. So just at the hind end of the head, you can see a lid or cover or bony structure which is covering the gills, and that is called as the gill cover or the operculum. So when you lift the operculum, you can see a chamber which is called as the opercular chamber, and inside the opercular chamber there will be 4 pairs of gills. Now moving on to the trunk. The trunk region bears the different types of fins. Then at about two-thirds the length of the body, there will be an opening which is called as the anal opening, through which the digestive waste will come out. And just behind the anal opening is the urinogenital opening. So here you can see that the digestive waste comes out through the anus, whereas the excretory waste as well as the gametes, they will come out through the urinogenital opening, because it is the common opening for gametes as well as urine. So since these 2 openings are separate, that means anal opening and urinogenital openings are separate, there will be no common chamber called as cloaca. So cloaca is absent because the urinogenital opening and the anus are separate. Then slide 6. Fin system. Fins are the locomotor organs in mullet. There are 2 sets of fins. They are the paired fins and the unpaired fins. Paired fins are seen on either side of the body, whereas unpaired fins will be median. So paired fins are lateral, whereas unpaired fins are median. The 2 paired fins are pectoral and pelvic fins. Pectoral fins are situated dorsal to the pelvic fin, we can say. So pectoral fins are dorsal in position compared to the pelvic fin. Pelvic fins are ventral with respect to the pectoral fin. So that is how they are arranged. And all these fins are supported by fin rays. Now the unpaired fins. The unpaired fins are dorsal fin, which will be seen in the mid dorsal line of the body. The ventral fin, which will be seen in the ventral mid ventral line of the body. And the tail fin or the caudal fin. So they are the unpaired fins or the median fins. So the median fins include the dorsal fin, the ventral fin, dorsal fin running through the mid dorsal side, ventral fin running through the mid ventral side, and the caudal fin at the tail. So they are unpaired. Now in mullet there are 2 dorsal fins. There is 1 ventral fin, which is also called as the anal fin, and there is a caudal fin. Now we go to the pectoral and pelvic fins. The pectoral fins are somewhat short in mullet. They are seen just behind the operculum as pairs. The pelvic fins in Mugil cephalus, if you examine that, you can see that they are located ventral to the pectoral fin, just behind it. So that is why, because of this position, it is said to be abdominal. That means it is located a little behind the pectoral fins and somewhat ventral to them. But in all fishes, they won't be abdominal. In some fishes, the pelvic fins will be located just ventral, vertically below the pectoral. Then they are said to be thoracic. In some fishes, they will be located just in front of the pectorals. Then they are said to be jugular. Whereas in mullet or Mugil cephalus, the pelvic fins are located a little behind the pectoral fins and ventral to them. So this position is said to be abdominal. Then slide 7, the caudal fin. The caudal fin has two lobes. It is bilobed. The two lobes are dorsal lobe and the ventral lobe. So when you look at the fin of mullet, both the lobes of the tail fin are symmetrical. They appear similar, but the symmetry is only external. But internally it is asymmetrical, because internally the vertebral column will be ending in the tail. But this vertebral column, how is it distributed equally to the dorsal and ventral lobes? No. The vertebral column, as it reaches the tail, it gets shortened and it is slightly upturned in the tail, and it will terminate in the dorsal lobe. So the internal arrangement is asymmetrical. So because of the upturning of the vertebral column towards the dorsal lobe, we can say that the dorsal and ventral lobe of the caudal fin are somewhat asymmetrical. So it is externally symmetrical but internally asymmetrical. And the fin rays are also disproportionately arranged. So even though they are internally asymmetrical, because of the external symmetry, they are said to be homocercal. And coming to the internal arrangement of the caudal fin in slide 8, we can see that the vertebral column has got the centrum, as seen in slide 8, the vertebral column has got a centrum. Towards the dorsal side, there will be the neural arch, and towards the ventral side, there will be the hemal arch. And coming to the tail, so the vertebral column, as it reaches the tail, the neural arches of this upturned vertebrae, which enter the dorsal lobe, will be reduced, whereas the hemal arches will be enlarged and flattened. So these enlarged and flattened hemal arches of the vertebrae which enter the tail region, they are called as a hypeural arches. So they are hypeural arches. So normally a vertebra will be having a dorsal neural arch and a ventral hemal arch. But the upturned vertebra which enters the tail fin will be having reduced neural arches but enlarged and flattened hemal arches. These enlarged and flattened hemal arches that are seen in the upturned vertebrae of the tail region are called as hypeural arches. Then you can see in slide 9 the different types of tail fin in different types of fishes. But here we are sticking on to the caudal fin of mullets. Slide 10 shows the exoskeleton. Exoskeleton is made up of scales. The scales are thin, flexible, plate-like, overlapping structures. And they originate from the dermis layer of the skin, but still they possess an epidermal covering. So the scales, though are dermal, they possess an epidermal covering, and they are thin, flexible and plate-like, and they are overlapping. And the anterior part of a scale will be seen embedded in the dermis, whereas the posterior end of the scale is free. So we can see the scale is an embedded structure whose anterior region will be embedded inside the skin, the dermis layer of the skin, but the posterior end will be free. As you can feel the outer side of a fish, you can feel the free posterior ends of a fish. If you move your hands over the body of a fish, you can feel the free posterior ends of the scales. And the scales are of two types. They are the cycloid scales and the ctenoid scales. And any scale will be having two parts. The cycloid and the ctenoid scales will be having two parts. They are the foci and the lines of Grove. So, foci is the first formed part in a scale. It is also called as the nucleus, or it is the central point. And from the central point, there will be seen a number of lines which are running concentrically around this foci. And these are called as the lines of Grove, because the nucleus develops first, then only the lines develop. And so, the concentric lines will represent the lines of Grove, which will help in age determination in fishes. So, the number of concentric lines around the foci will correspond to the age of fishes, just as we count the age of a tree with the help of the lines on its trunk. Then, slide 11. I already told you the anterior part is embedded, whereas the posterior part is free. And the embedded anterior part is not visible because it is overlapped by the scale which is coming in front. The posterior region of a scale, it will overlap the anterior region of the next scale that comes in behind. So, we can say this kind of arrangement as imbricate or overlapping arrangement. So, the anterior part of a scale is usually overlapped by the posterior part of the scale in front. Okay, so the front scale will overlap the back scale. The posterior region of the front scale will overlap the back scale. So, this type of arrangement is said to be overlapping or imbricating, and this allows greater flexibility of movement. But there are some scales which are not arranged like this. But cycloid scales and ctenoid scales will be arranged in an overlapping manner. So, this will allow greater flexibility of movement. Then slide 12, the two types of scales are cycloid scales and ctenoid scales. So, they have got a basic structure which is similar. That is, they are having a focus and the concentric lines of Grove. But what makes them different? So, both of them are having focus and concentric lines of Grove. And one more thing you can see in a scale is that, apart from these concentric lines of Grove, there will be some radial lines or radial grooves which will cut the concentric lines. The concentric lines are occasionally cut by radial lines also. Anyway, the difference between cycloid scale and ctenoid scale. Cycloid scales are circular in outline somewhat. They have got a smooth texture. And their outer or posterior margin will be smooth. Whereas in ctenoid scale, they are just like the cycloid scale. But the difference is that their posterior edge will be serrated, or they will be having teeth-like or spinule-like structures which are called as ctenae. That is why they are called as ctenoid scales. So, because of the presence of these teeth, the scales have a rough texture. Whereas in the case of cycloid scales, the posterior end will be smooth, it will be devoid of spinules, whereas in ctenoid scales, the posterior end will be serrated with the presence of spinules or teeth or ctenae. Otherwise, the basic structure will be the same, that is, they are having the focus around which the lines of Grove will be deposited. And these are the two types of scales in fishes. And slide 13. The cycloid and ctenoid scales, they consist of two regions. There will be a surface layer which is bony, which consists of calcium, salts, etc. And beneath the surface layer, there will be another layer which is called as a fibrous layer, which is mainly composed of collagen. So, outer bony layer and deeper fibrous layer will be there, which is made up of collagen. And these two types of scales, that is the cycloid scales and ctenoid scales, are derived from another type of scale which is called ganoid scale. Ganoid scale is having a pigment which is called ganoin. But in cycloid and ctenoid scales, there is no ganoin. So these two can be considered to be modified ganoid scale. And when a fish with cycloid or ctenoid scales grows, its scales also grow. So that is how the concentric lines of growth represent their age.